Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of what is behind the House Republicans' political brinkmanship. American University historian Alan Lichtman, the author of White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, joins us to explain the source of the dysfunction on Capitol Hill, which appears to be the blind and unbridled ambition of Eric Cantor, who wants to become the next speaker. Then we'll look into the appalling foreclosure scandal that has millions of Americans homeless while millions of homes sit empty. William K. Black joins us. He was the chief litigator who put hundreds of bank fraudsters in jail after the savings and loan scandal of the 1980s, and we'll look into the efforts by the Obama administration and state's attorney generals to indemnify the banks involved in the recent subprime housing fraud that almost tanked the global economy. With the attorney generals of California, New York, and Delaware still resisting this trillion-dollar slap on the wrist, we will attempt to find out why people who could pay a fair price for housing are kept out of empty and abandoned homes they once occupied. Then finally, we'll assess whether there will be a change in the dismal state of deteriorating relations between the U.S. and Pakistan following the announcement by the Pentagon that mistakes were made by NATO that resulted in the recent deaths of 24 Pakistani soldiers. Suja Nawaz, the author of Cross Swords, Pakistan, Its Army, and the Wars Within, joins us to address the tensions between the two erstwhile allies and the warnings by Pakistan's Prime Minister that conspirators are plotting to bring down the Pakistan civilian government and there will be no state within a state. Obvious references to the military and its powerful intelligence service, the ISI. Let's now discuss the behind-the-scenes power struggle in the House that resulted in the latest standoff. I spoke with Alan Lichtman just before news broke a short while ago that John Boehner was caving in and would allow the House to vote on the Senate bill, a humiliation for Boehner, who appears to have been set up for the fall by Eric Cantor. Joining us now is Alan Lichtman, a professor of history at American University, who studies both the American right and the presidency. His books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and Keys to the White House, a surefire way to predicting the next president. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984. Welcome to Background Briefing, Alan Lichtman.
Thank you, Ian.
And if the election were held today, what would happen? I mean, there's nothing more dysfunctional and embarrassing about the nature of these continuing deadlocks that seem to be engineered by the Tea Party caucus of the Republican House. We had the almost shutdown of the U.S. government and the destruction of the full faith and credit of the United States unless they got their way. And this seems to be their M.O., What's your understanding of what's behind this?
Well, first of all, regardless of the shenanigans among Republicans in the Congress, the keys to the White House have been pointing to an Obama victory for the past year and a half. Yes, he has the economy out against him, but almost everything else is going for him. He's the sitting president. He won't be challenged in his own party. There's no third-party split. He had big foreign policy triumphs with Gaddafi and bin Laden. He's not been hit by scandal. The nation is not falling apart from social unrest. He doesn't face a charismatic challenger. All those things are going for Obama. And now the Republicans in Congress are making absolutely, positively certain that Obama seals the deal with the American people. It's utterly remarkable when the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal should come out and say that the Republicans in Congress are doing all that they possibly could do to make sure that Obama gets reelected. You know, the approval rating of Congress is already below that of Attila the Hun. It's almost in single digits. It's hard to imagine it could sink even more. But they've now forfeited, perhaps, the one issue that's been a staple of Republicans ever since Ronald Reagan in 1980, and that's taxes. They have made two huge mistakes on taxes. Number one, opposing the millionaire tax, which the great majority of Americans support. And number two, tying things up to make it so difficult and maybe impossible to extend the payroll tax that gives about $1,000 in tax breaks to average, ordinary Americans. For the first time that I can recall in this administration, maybe since the first few months, all of a sudden the American people now trust Obama more than the Republicans on taxes.
Well, I'm surprised, though, that the president and the Republicans weren't able to make more and, or at least clarified in the real nature of the House Republicans' hypocrisy, or the Republicans in general, being for every tax cut except when it comes to the middle class and 160 million working Americans. Now, the president did finally make that case today, appearing with average working Americans, where he spoke with a note of disgust towards the Congress. But, you know, tacking on the Keystone Pipeline was such a flagrant way to get political cover when it all comes down to the fact that the Republicans, at least in the House, will not fund the extension of the payroll tax cuts by a modest levy on millionaires and billionaires. The Democrats dropped that, though. That's what I don't understand, Alan.
Well, you know, the Democrats are a bit enthralled to the millionaires and the billionaires themselves. But as you say, Obama now has begun to make that argument, and he's got plenty of time to make it between now and next November. And you'll hear it time and again that the Republicans are not really for tax cuts. They're only for tax breaks in the top, you know, 1%, 2%, or 3%. They only care about helping their millionaire friends and not ordinary Americans when it comes to tax cuts. Not only did they balk at the millionaire tax increase to fund the payroll tax reduction, they won't even agree to a two-month extension of the payroll tax cut so that you can negotiate a more long-term cut. So they're on the wrong side of the issue in a double-edged way. Plus, they seem utterly divided and utterly dysfunctional. You now see Mitch McConnell, the Republican minority leader in the Senate, publicly coming out and chastising the House leadership for not being able to get this tax cut deal done in the House. And you see John Boehner, the Republican Speaker of the House, absolutely impotent, hapless, held in thrall by the extreme right-wing Tea Party group of his Republican Party, which now seems to have found its spokesperson in Eric Cantor of Virginia.
Well, isn't that what this game is about? I mean, I was wondering whether Eric Cantor had lost his mind, because he's clearly pushing this showdown, and he is the darling of the, well, at least he's got the Tea Party caucus in his pocket. And I would have thought, you know, what's this man doing? He's going to go down in flames. But it's clear what he's doing. He's going to have Boehner go down in flames, right? Boehner's the one that's going to have to make the humiliating retreat from how they box themselves in. So
that's right. Boehner's the leader. Boehner's the guy on the spot. And Cantor doesn't have all that much to lose. And if Boehner does go down in flames, then, you know, Cantor could become the next speaker, although they seem to be doing everything possible to make sure that it'll be a Democratic speaker come 2013, because these shenanigans are certainly not going to do anything to help Republican candidates in the swing seats. Obviously, the right-wingers in the heavily Republican seats, but a lot of those Republicans, as a result of 2010, are in precarious seats.
So, Alan Lichtman, is this blind ambition on Cantor's part?
I think it absolutely is blind ambition and blind ideology on the part of those lemmings that he's leading off the cliff. That is, there is now an element of the Republican Party, which, you know, they're legislators. And you know, the very act of being a legislator means you've got to give and take, negotiate, and compromise. But these folks don't have a compromising, negotiating bone in their body. It's our way or no way.
Again, Alan Lichtman is a professor of history at American University who studies both the American right and the presidency. His books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, A Surefire Way to Predicting the Next President. And his prediction system has correctly predicted the outcome of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984. When former House Speaker Newt Gingrich goes public and urges Boehner to cut a deal, I must say you realize they're in terrible trouble, because in many ways it was Gingrich that brought this combative, take no prisoner, scorched earth kind of approach to the legislative process that the Tea Parties have amped up 1,000 degrees. But does that strike you as a great irony?
It is a great irony, because this is Gingrichism run amok. Remember, it was Newt Gingrich who pushed the government to shut down back in 1995, who was talking about disloyal Americans and who are real Americans, overreaching with his rhetoric, with his policies. And of course, ultimately, Bill Clinton won handily in his reelection bid in 1996. And Bill Clinton was even left standing after the impeachment controversy. But who was dismissed? Newt Gingrich.
So I noticed, Alan Lichtman, that when Barney Frank gave his kind of farewell press conference as he's retiring from the Congress, he made a remark which really caught my attention, and that he said that you can't work with the Republicans anymore, that basically, I mean in the House, because he's obviously in the House, he says that they're either, they think like Michelle Bachmann, or if they don't think like Michelle Bachmann, they're afraid that they have to go along with Michelle Bachmann's agenda, otherwise Michelle Bachmann will run against him in the next primary. How does that strike you as a description of the House?
Well, I think it's a fairly accurate description that is borne out by the fact that the House does not seem to be willing to compromise and negotiate on anything. We see that in the Senate, too. In fact, if you look at the Obama health care bill, that was the only major piece of social legislation in the history of the country to be passed without a single opposition vote. That was certainly a signal of things to come. And now we've seen that taken to the ultimate extreme in the House. On the one hand, you might think, all right, they want to defeat Obama, so they don't want to give him anything. But as the Wall Street Journal editorial pointed out, they seem to be intent only on defeating themselves. This can't even be explained by opposition to Barack Obama. It can only be explained by the most rigid ideological purity that, you know, we are going to insist that everything has to bear our stamp or nothing gets done.
So you suggested earlier, Alan Lichtman, that this is all but guaranteeing President Obama's re-election. You did mention that he has no opposition. There is this third-party effort that's well-funded by a billionaire, Peter Ackerman. It's called Americans Elect. It's going to operate online, and people will vote online for their presidential candidate. They've qualified for a number of ballots around the country, including California. So is that a factor? I mean,
it could be, but you got to have a candidate. It's very, very difficult to mount a third-party campaign in this country. Even Ralph Nader, a national hero for many, a household name, could only garner 2.7% of the popular vote. That's extraordinary. Without a candidate and without a, you know, strong platform like Ross Perot had when he was pushing the deficit and political corruption, it would be very, very difficult to mount a third-party campaign. Even to get on the ballot in all the states is going to be extremely difficult. But a movement without a candidate and without even a lot more money than is even being put into it right now is not going to upset this race.
So what do you think of the idea of going online and typing in your vote as if it's a, you know, you're voting for Dancing for the Stars, you know?
Well, it's a, you know, Dancing for the Stars, American Idol, get a lot of votes, and this might get a lot of people typing in online, but it's not likely to get very many votes at the polls.
Well, also, apparently, Peter Ackerman and his group that are running Americans Elect, they ultimately decide on who the candidates are, I believe.
Of course they do. There's no democratic process for choosing the candidate, and that's going to turn off most of the American people. Boy, you know, you could resurrect Ronald Reagan and put him up as a third-party candidate, and he'd have a tough time.
So just back to the Republican dysfunction, trying to understand their motivations. The Tea Party, of course, came out of disgust with Wall Street, and I think the Democrats ceded an enormous issue there by not tapping into the outrage the American people felt about the bailouts. That's, another chapter of
it is,
which we don't have time to get into. But the fact that they picked it up and ran with it, but then they seem to have been captured by the Koch money, and a couple of political pros, Karl Rove and Dick Armey, managed the movement. But they sure got a lot of people elected in 2010. So what happened in 2010 that you think is not going to happen in 2012?
Well, midterm elections and presidential elections run on entirely different rhythms. What happened in 2010 was the people who were motivated to vote were those who wanted to make a statement against Barack Obama, who kind of wanted to vote no. Just like in 2006, those who really wanted to vote were those who wanted to vote no on George W. Bush. Presidential election is entirely different because there is no no vote. There is a choice between two candidates, and that poses an entirely different problem for the voter. So I don't think you can base anything about 2012 on 2010. In fact, the three presidents since World War II who lost control of Congress during their administrations in the midterms all went on to win the next election: Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, and Bill Clinton. So you can't judge on that. Plus, the Tea Party is very different now. Tea Party is no longer an independent movement. As mostly happens with independent movements, it has gotten co-opted by a major party, in this case, the Republican Party. The Tea Party is now part of the Republican Party. It's not a nonpartisan independent movement, if it ever was.
Well, when you said earlier, Alan Lichtman, that the Tea Party zealots, I guess is a fair way to put it, are driven by ideology, when I mentioned the funding by the Kochs and their capture by Dick Armey and Karl Rove, their legislative priorities have been clearly those of the plutocrats. I mean, they've gone to the mat for millionaires and billionaires. This whole payroll tax cut standoff comes down to the fact that they would not allow, and the Democrats folded, but they would not entertain the idea of a modest surtax on millionaires and billionaires. When they threatened to shut down the government earlier, it was again over the same issues, whether to tax millionaires and billionaires. So are they really fraudulent in the sense that they seem to be carrying the water for the Kochs?
I think they're fraudulent populists. But then again, my book, White Protestant Nation, points out that the conservative movement has always been a pro-business movement ever since the modern conservative movement was founded after World War One. Its two cardinal core values were preserving private business, conserving private business, and conserving what they regard as traditional social values. So the fact that the Tea Party is very much carrying water for American big business is absolutely consistent with the last 100 years of conservative history. People are utterly misled when they say what conservatism represents is limited government or fiscal responsibility, and that's what the Tea Party is all about. Nonsense. The biggest spender in the history of the country, the biggest bureaucratic builder in the history of the world, was one of our most conservative presidents, George W. Bush. Both liberals and conservatives want to spend. They might spend it on different things, liberals on environmental programs and social programs, conservatives on homeland security, the military, police forces, border control, but they all want to spend. That has nothing to do with fiscal conservatism or limited government whatsoever. And never underestimate the importance of the social issues for the right as well. Look what happened to Rick Perry, in part because of that modest little program to help the children of immigrants in Texas. So absolutely, it is no surprise that the Tea Party should be carrying the water for American business.
Well, just in closing, Alan Lichtman, we mentioned earlier that the Tea Party were the first to run with the outrage on Wall Street. The Democrats and the White House dropped the ball on that issue, and they were able to translate that anger into the polls, electorally picking up, I think, 70 or so seats in the House and changing the very nature of the Republican House and essentially capturing the national agenda. Do you think that on the other side of the political spectrum, the Occupy movement that is largely on the left of the spectrum, having spoken to a number of occupiers around the country, they are zealously against the Democratic Party in large. So how can that, the 99% message, can that translate electorally?
I don't think so. I think it would be very difficult to take the Occupy Wall Street message and translate it electorally. And those folks are right. The Democratic Party, less than the Republican Party, I'll say that. But the Democratic Party is also very much a party heavily influenced by business interests, business donors, and is certainly not ready to take on Wall Street and adopt a full-throated left-wing populist position. It never has throughout its history. Even the Roosevelt administration, while bitterly opposed by business, probably did more for business than any administration in the history of the country.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Alan Lichtman.
My pleasure, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Alan Lichtman, who is a professor of history at American University, who studies both the American right and the presidency. His books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, a surefire way to predicting the next president. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984. We're going to take a brief station break and be back in a moment talking about the $1 trillion slap on the wrist for bank foreclosure fraud.
Nothing but a dirty, dirty old man. You do your thinking with a one-track mind. Keep talking about heaven, glory, but on your face is a different story. Clean up your rap, your story's getting dusty. Wash out your mouth, your lies are getting rusty. Can't believe nothing you say, 'cause I'm around and I see what you do.